I'm Steve Kraske of the Kansas City Star, and this is Up to Date. Millions of Americans are sinking below the poverty line, and the economic downturn just seems to be making things worse. But a new campaign vows to cut the number of families living in poverty by half in the next 10 years. This hour, we'll talk with the manager of that movement about how he wants to make that happen. But first, everyone knows Betty Ford from the clinic that bears her name. We'll look at how this independent first lady made waves in Washington and beyond. We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Poverty in Kansas City, we know the picture isn't pretty, and it's also not pretty these days in Johnson County, which is dealing with a relatively new uptick. Today we'll talk about all this, and also a program called Half in 10, which is aiming at just what it sounds like, cutting the poverty rate by half in 10 years. But first up today, the life and legacy of Betty Ford, the former First Lady known for her battles with breast cancer and substance abuse. But perhaps even more than these struggles, she's remembered for her candor and courage, an outspoken First Lady whose public positions did not always square with her husband's. John Robert Green is the author of Betty Ford, Candor and Courage in the White House. He's a professor of history and humanities at Cazenovia College in New York, and he was last on this show last summer talking about President George H.W. Bush. And, Bob, so good to have you again.
Steve, it's good to be back. Thanks for having me.
Well, Betty Ford had her struggles. She had her afflictions, didn't she, Bob?
She did indeed. She was, right down to her dying day, she was afflicted with three incurable diseases. She had alcoholism. She was a recovering drug abuser, and she had debilitating arthritis. So one of the family members told me when I was researching the book, he said, this is a woman who was in pain for the entirety of her adult life, at least for part of every single day.
How well did she manage it?
Well, she didn't manage it particularly well.
That's
when
right.
She was younger. She tried to manage the pain of arthritis with prescription drugs, became addicted to those. She was in the congressional martini lunch and dinner circuit when her husband, Gerald Ford, was moving up through the ranks, which mixed with the drugs and didn't help the arthritis any. It was actually a catch-22. It was a vicious cycle that she didn't get out of until the intervention with her family, when they finally, you know, tried to do something about it in the year after they got out of the White House.
What did they do?
What they did was in the year after she got out of the White House, she was stunned that her husband went out on the rubber chicken circuit again. She thought that they went to Rancho Mirage in California, thought that he was going to retire.
Those days were over.
And those days were over.
Yeah.
But he really had dreams of running for president again in 1980. He got out of the White House in 1976 when Jimmy Carter defeated him. And so he was out on the road, and she took to drinking and abusing pills even more than she had before. And her daughter-in-law, she had one daughter-in-law at the time, came to the conclusion that she couldn't let grandchildren near their grandmother. So the kids organized a intervention. I believe this was in 1978, 79.
Wow.
The entire family was there, but more importantly, so was the former president. And that put some gravitas on it. And they said, you're done. And we're not letting our grandchildren near you and this type of thing. And she went to Long Beach. There was a facility there. I'm not sure if it's there anymore. But she was there for 6 weeks, went through the entire program.
This was for her drinking now.
For her drinking. Mm-hmm. But when she went in, she said that she was having trouble with alcohol, and she did not want to let the public know that she was also addicted to painkillers. There was a stigma at the time that they separated it. Mm-hmm. So she went in, and it was for both, and she came out clean on both, which was something, because they couldn't clean her of the arthritis. And she couldn't take painkillers for the rest of her life. So
it's interesting that, to some extent, so much of this wasn't known while she was in the White House under this incredibly intense scrutiny. day after day after day, Bob.
Well, there's no other way to describe it, Steve, except that she and the White House deliberately deceived the American public.
Hmm.
She had a friend, a close friend, who was her drinking buddy at the time.
Who was
and,
it?
I'm blanking okay. on the name right now.
But someone not in politics.
Someone not in politics. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, with every political family and with every person in political power, there are the hangers-on and
sure.
the friends. And to a certain extent, it was something that was more socially acceptable at the time in the 1960s and 1970s than it is today. The four-martini lunch,
sure.
the four-martini dinner. And she did blend right in. Now, there are occasions, and you can see them on YouTube, that have been floating around there of her being interviewed, and she was clearly under the influence.
Hmm.
The famous appearance that she made on the Mary Tyler Moore Show in 1976, it's a hoot. She's the first lady to go on a situation comedy, but she's also clearly under the influence, and that you can actually see.
You can see it watching the show today.
Yeah, and Gerald Ford, when he came in 1974, he immediately started running for president in 1976. Everybody knew it, and it was not in his best interest to have the first lady out on the road all that much, but when she, in her condition. But she bucked that. I mean, after she had her breast, her mastectomy, she demanded to go out on the road and speak out in favor of breast self-examination. And when she went out, the public loved her. So the White House was caught in this real Hobson's choice. Here's a first lady who at any point in time might show the strains of being an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
And yet when she went out on the road – and she hadn't been drinking. The crowds loved her. She was funny. She was intelligent. She was everything that you wanted a political partner to be.
Hey, and she actually helped her husband politically. I think you've said that in 1974, after President Ford pardons Richard Nixon in one of the most controversial political moves any president's ever made,
mm-hmm.
His poll numbers are sinking.
Mm-hmm.
Betty Ford undergoes her procedure, her mastectomy,
mm-hmm.
and suddenly Gerald Ford's numbers are going back up again rapidly.
That's right.
Right.
And it's not out of pity. And it's what it is that when she comes out, she refuses, like Shirley Temple Black, who was the other celebrity at the time who had also undergone radical mastectomy, but she refused to go out on the road. She wanted to recover in private. Mrs. Ford goes out and literally recovers in public. And the public loves her. You remember the CB craze?
Yeah, oh, sure.
CB
yeah,
radios,
yeah.
Right? She got a CB radio because she just wanted one.
Yeah.
And she puts it in the White House, and she's talking to truckers on I-495, and they gave her the handle First Mama.
Yeah.
And so they're talking to First Mama, and now all these cartoons are coming out and everything. The public really loved her. And you know, as a historian, and you stop and think, well, what would we have done if we had known about Marilyn Monroe with Jack Kennedy?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what would we have done if we had known about Betty Ford's alcoholism to Betty Ford? And the answer is there is no answer. You really don't know. She doesn't come out to the public until after she goes to Long Beach and these are her words now. I'm going to redeem my sins. And she redeemed her sin. What she was talking about, of course, was raising money for the Betty Ford Center.
Yeah.
So
we're visiting with John Robert Green about his book, Betty Ford, Candor and Courage in the White House. Bob speaks tonight at 6:30 at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library on the Plaza as part of the library's ongoing series on First Ladies. To grab a seat, go to kclibrary.org. You know, you talk about her nicknames. You know, she's First Lady Betty Ford.
Mm-hmm.
Critics weren't crazy about her. Conservative Republicans particularly, they refer to her sometimes as No Lady, not First Lady,
that's
No
right.
Lady.
Gerald Ford was being challenged at the time by Ronald Reagan for the Republican nomination. It's the first real resurgence of Republican conservatism since Republican conservatism.
And the last great convention took place
right here in Kansas City.
At Kemper Arena.
That's right. When the two of them went head to head.
That's right.
And so when Betty Ford comes out and she is speaking pro-choice and she is speaking, and it might be difficult for some people to remember, but a lot of conservatives felt that no woman should be on the road anywhere talking publicly about her body. talking about breast self-examination. She's for the ERA.
Yeah.
She is not an independent woman. She is not. She doesn't have a job. She always said, my job is raising my children. She is. There's a debate as to whether or not she is a feminist. And you people can't see me, but I'm waving quote marks here in the air. But there's no doubt about the fact that she was a target for the Republicans. But the Reagan correspondence that I looked at for the book makes it clear that Reagan didn't know what to do with it. Reagan had no clue, and I speak of the Reagan campaign. It was tough to criticize the president's wife, and they didn't know how far they should go by saying, you know, she's anti-abort, you know, that type of thing. And so they really never came to grips with it. So she was a big help on the campaign trail simply because the Reagan forces had no clue how to get to her.
You know, you wonder how she would have fared today, Bob, with the Republican Party that's so much more conservative, really across the board. A first lady like Betty Ford would have really upset the tea kettle, right?
Well, that's a really good point, but I'll answer it. She wouldn't have been a Republican today. The Republican Party is now a much more conservative Republican Party. People like Gerald Ford, people like Tom Dewey, people like Richard Nixon would have no home in the Republican Party today. I don't know where they would be. Well, they were good party men, so they would stay Republicans. But it's not really the philosophy that they would be after.
So in every real sense of the phrase, she's a mold breaker from day one. I mean, this is a newfangled, new kind of first lady. This country had never seen anything like it before.
As I've gone out to talk about my book, and you know, I hope that I see everybody. It's such a beautiful facility, the Kansas City Public Library.
Spectacular.
I'll say this not just because I'm here. It's better than the one in New York. I mean, it is fantastic. I hope everybody comes out tonight. I get a lot of questions about Eleanor Roosevelt because to a lot of people, Eleanor Roosevelt is the first modern first lady. And there's a lot of things that Betty Ford does that Eleanor Roosevelt didn't. Direct contact with Congress. Eleanor Roosevelt did not go out on the road to shill for any specific legislation. Yes, she pushed for civil rights legislation, but it was all in private. She did not go out because the president, Franklin Roosevelt, felt that she should, particularly in wartime, you know, be less seen and less heard. And she did that. She comes into her own after Franklin Roosevelt dies. Gerald Ford told me this on a number of occasions. He didn't know what to do with his wife. And he certainly wasn't going to cross her. And so she goes out, and people around Gerald Ford, actually it was Dick Cheney, who was Gerald Ford's chief of staff at the time, recognized the political value of Mrs. Ford and argued with Don Rumsfeld, who at the time felt that she should be called off and limited. And she went out on the road, and Gerald Ford took the jokes. You know, I can't control my wife jokes. But it was all a piece of the White House strategy in 1976, because look at the other first lady, or the other person. It was Nancy Reagan. And Nancy Reagan did not do campaigning in 1976. The American public just did not see her out on the road. She didn't think that that was her role. Yeah. Betty had the stage to herself.
You know, we're sitting here, Bob, we're joking about Gerald Ford and how he felt about his wife. But by every measure, the two seem to have a very, very strong marriage, an enduring marriage. And I'm just wondering, you know, how did the president and then the former president, how did he deal with his wife's addictions? How supportive was he? Where was he in all of that?
Well, before the end of the White House years, and while he was coming up particularly as minority leader in the Congress, Gerald Ford dealt with it by being on the road. And to talk about
by being gone. Yeah.
And you have to use the word enabler when you get into the White House and you turn your back when friends are drinking with her, that type of thing. When he got out of the White House, he took the role that was thrust upon him by his children, particularly Susan, who is now the executive director of the American Arthritis Association. And Susan is the lead voice in the family since Betty died. Susan started the meeting with the family. She brought the president home, and the president then came around. What he did was he latched on to her problems when he could share something with her, and they both shared with Bob and Dolores Hope the fundraising for the Betty Ford Center. and one senses, although I never talked to the two of them about their personal lives after the White House. There's just some places that you don't go, even with the president of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But you got the sense that when they had that project to share, that he became closer and more empathetic towards her. Let me put it another way. He was better with her in recovery than he was with her before recovery.
You know, she lasted. She lived until 2011, which I had forgotten just until I looked last night. I imagine you spent time with her. You spent time with him.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about them. What are they like to be with and to be around them?
They're hysterical.
I bet. Yeah.
I mean, when I was interviewing President Ford the first time, I was out of Vail, Colorado, and I had overstayed my welcome. The good president. I met President Ford many more times than I've met Mrs. Ford. And let's put it charitably, President Ford had jibber-jabber down to a science. You know, you would go in with him, and he'd talk to the ceiling, and he'd talk to you, like, over here, Mr. President, talk to me.
Yeah.
And he was off on something. And there was somebody out in the hallway waiting for me. Mrs. Ford came in, and she brought – I remember the dog's name. Dog's name was Happy. Little tiny Cocker Spaniel. I'm sitting there. I had to get out. So she takes the dog, and she throws the dog in my lap. This dog is looking at me, and the dog relieved himself right in my lap, and it was time for me to go. And the former first lady's just standing there and saying, "It was a pleasure to meet you, Dr. Green."
Did you have a chance to interview her time?
I did not.
Because she didn't make herself available?
She did not want to be made available for the biography. And it's interesting because I find that the less I talk to people that I'm writing about, the better I write about them, the more objective you are. She did not deny me. What you don't want to have happen is that the person you're writing about starts calling people and saying, don't talk to them. And she never did that. Neither did President Ford. I talked with President Ford after each of the books that I wrote about him. So it's easy. You don't want to become a kept historian.
How did he feel about the books?
I think that the family themselves had a little bit of a problem with the biography of Betty Ford because of the way that I treated Jerry Ford. And as I looked at Gerald Ford and his role with her drinking while he was in Congress.
Mm-hmm.
We were just talking about that a second ago. I did more than suggest that he was more interested in his career than he was with what was going on home. And while I'll stand by that assessment, I think that it hit some of the members of the family, not the immediate family, but friends, the wrong way.
Biographer John Robert Green is our guest today. We're talking about the life and times of Betty Ford. He speaks tonight at 6:30 at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library on the Plaza. For more information, kclibrary.org. And we're wondering how our listeners recall and remember Betty Ford and just how outspoken she was. How did you react to her back in those days? 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, our email address, UpToDate@kcur.org. You can also tweet us at KCUR up to date. You know, Bob, the New York Times once said of her that Mrs. Ford's impact on American culture, get this, may have been far wider and more lasting than that of her husband's. It's amazing to me. What do you make of that?
That's absolutely true.
Really?
Absolutely true. Gerald Ford was a scrupulously honest man. Gerald Ford did not overpromise. Gerald Ford was stuck with being a moderate Republican when being a moderate Republican was being pushed out the door by the conservatives. And Jimmy Carter cornered him with the market of integrity and beat him senseless with it.
Hmm.
But Gerald Ford, when all is said and done, he completed some of Richard Nixon's concepts, did not initiate. What Betty Ford did was she crossed the line in terms of being a 1960s wife of a powerful man into a woman of her own, and she did it in the glare of the spotlight. I mean, she was a professional dancer. She was a paid professional dancer with the Martha Graham Troupe when she was young.
Wow.
And she was a buyer for Herpelsheimer's. Figure this one out. There was a place called Herpelsheimer's.
Herpelsheimer's. What's Herpelsheimer's?
It sounds like, I don't know. Well, never mind. department store in Grand Rapids. And so she was a professional woman as a buyer going in and out of New York City. She had a life and she had a career pre-Gerald Ford. But she also had a first marriage to an alcoholic, Bill Warren, that I found example or I found evidence of abuse. And so she comes out of that a strong woman.
Then she didn't know she'd been married before.
That's right. But she swallowed up. She was. And it was a nine. She calls it in her book. I want to quote directly here. A 9-year mistake. I think that's how she dealt with it in her book. Mm. And she comes out of that a strong woman. But then she marries a guy who's the fifth most powerful man finally in the American government. And she is subsumed by that. When she finally gets a chance to shine, she does outshine him. There is no question. But what was magical, I think, about their relationship, and you can say the same thing about the Reagan's relationship, Gerald Ford let his wife shine in the way that Nancy Reagan let her husband shine. It was all about him. After the Betty Ford Center was raised, it was all about her. That's and he used to go to these things and said, I'm the one who accompanied Betty Ford to this event.
That's just the way it is, right? Well, what kind of childhood did she have? Because I know that by the time she turned 16, her father died very unexpectedly, very tragically.
That's right.
What happened there?
We still don't know all the details. He was out.
It's a mystery, right?
He was out in his car in Grand Rapids. He was a traveling salesman for Goodyear Tire. He was out in a car with the motor running.
In the garage, I think.
In the garage.
Yeah.
And it may have been accidental asphyxiation or it may have been suicide. I found his death, his death certificate. It did say accidental asphyxiation. But some of the press at the time, he was a prominent man. He was making a buck or two in Grand Rapids during the Depression. They knew, you know, Bill Bloomer's name. But it suggested suicide. Really not going to be known. But what really affected Betty was not so much his death, but that she went to the funeral and her mother, Hortense, got her aside and she said, you need to know your father was an alcoholic, which meant all this living a lie that had been done when Hortense said she was going out on the road to join him because he was traveling salesman. She was pulling him out of gutter somewhere. And we weren't as sophisticated in the nature versus nurture debate, you know, in 1920, whatever, when he died, even Betty understood that this put her at risk for alcohol abuse.
You wonder how something like that, how she sort of digested that information and how it impacted her going forward.
I don't know. Let's work under a couple of assumptions here. Let's work under the assumption that this was all a complete surprise, that they had seen no indication, and I don't know this to be true, they had seen no indication of aberrant behavior on the dad's part, and he suddenly ends up dead. And then she goes into a funeral parlor, and her mom says, you know, he drank himself to that, and he may have killed himself as a result of alcohol. And she's, I think, 12 at the time or 13 years old. It had to have shocked her. She says in her memoirs that she went out and she was looking for a man like her father. And she got it in Bill Warren. Her first husband.
Yeah.
A traveling salesman and an alcoholic. And she drank herself. She says that's where it began. I was drinking when he was gone.
How about the rest of her childhood? Remove the father's death at a young age. How was the rest of it?
All about dancing. If you see pictures of Betty Ford, I'll show some pictures tonight at 6:30 at the Kansas City Public Library on the plaza, which is where I will be tonight. Thanks, Steve.
Yeah.
You see how well built this woman is. She's an athlete. She really is when you strip her down to and she was a professional dancer who studied with Martha Graham at Middlebury College. And then she joined Martha Graham's dance troupe in New York. She just wasn't quite good enough at age 19 to make the traveling national troupe.
Mm-hmm.
And so Martha kept her on for what she called the stay-at-homes, which danced about once a month at Lincoln Center, when Lincoln Center wasn't really Lincoln Center in New York City. And she modeled the rest of the time. But Hortense, her mother, very strong personality. This for her, this was always get it out of your system and eventually you'll come home to Grand Rapids and be a society doyen.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what happened. She went back there and married Bill Warren. And
you know, a couple of final points, Bob. You know, she had four kids. She and Gerald had four kids. She didn't spank her kids, didn't believe in it. And she once told a TV interviewer that her kids probably messed around with marijuana.
Yes.
So what kind of mom was she?
Boy, that's an interesting question because—
Kind of a loaded one, too,
well,
isn't it?
Well, it's a loaded question for 2013
mm-hmm.
because when you look at how she presented herself, and you're talking, of course, about the famous 60 Minutes interview where she told Maurice Safer that she knew that her daughter had tried marijuana and probably had had an extramarital affair. Think of how that made Susan feel when she heard that on national. She would be treated today it could have even been treated as child abuse today. But back then, it was a rather traditional way of dealing with a family relationship within the powerful. And you're not used to taking the Fords of Grand Rapids and putting them into the same category as the Kennedys of Hyannis or the Bushes of Midland, Texas, and seeing what happens to these kids. Betty continued to her dying day to say they did a good job in the White House. Final thought. Hillary Clinton, she goes into the White House. She's elected with her husband, and she wants to get advice on how to raise Chelsea Clinton.
She calls Betty Ford.
And Betty Ford talked to her. And no matter how you feel about Bill Clinton, there's no one who can say that Chelsea Clinton didn't turn out as good, if not better, than any presidential child. And Senator Clinton, who I've met on a couple of occasions, Senator Clinton gives Betty Ford a lot of credit for that and giving her help with that.
Well, what an interesting choice for a biographer, Betty Ford. What a story.
Indeed it was.
Yeah. Again, John Robert Green speaks tonight at 6:30 at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library. More information, kclibrary.org.